Penguin Random House Audio presents In Full Flight, A Story of Africa and Atonement. This is the author, John Hemingway. Going up that river was like traveling back to the earliest beginnings of the world, when vegetation rioted on the earth and the big trees were kings. An empty stream, a great silence, an impenetrable forest. The air was warm, thick, heavy, sluggish. There was no joy in the brilliance of sunshine. The long stretches of the waterway ran on, deserted, into the gloom of overshadowed distances. On silvery sandbanks, hippos and alligators sunned themselves side by side. The broadening waters flowed through a mob of wooded islands. You lost your way on that river as you would in a desert, and butted all day long against shoals, trying to find the channel, till you thought yourself bewitched and cut off forever from everything you had known once, somewhere, far away in another existence, perhaps. There were moments when one's past came back to one, as it will sometimes, when you have not a moment to spare to yourself. But it came in the shape of an unrestful and noisy dream, remembered with wonder amongst the overwhelming realities of this strange world of plants and water and silence. And this stillness of life did not in the least resemble a peace. It was the stillness of an implacable force brooding over an inscrutable intention. It looked at you with a vengeful aspect. Joseph Conrad, Heart of Darkness. Prologue, The End. On February 6, 1999, a mob of yellow-billed kites circle Wilson Airport in Kenya, the busiest civil aviation hub in all Africa. The carrion birds had just left the nearby Nairobi slum of Kibera and were exploiting an uncommon void in the airspace over the runways. They might have been honor guards as they circled above a cortege of land cruisers, sedans, and buses out of which poured mourners, women in dated frocks and men stiff in regimental blazers, shiny at the elbow from age. Here and there, Ismaili and Sikh women, exiting minivans, arranged their saris. The great majority of arrivals were African, dressed in clothes reserved for church, weddings, and death. Within the hangar, only a few found seats. Otherwise, it was standing room only. None could recall Wilson Airport so hushed, with all airplanes tied down as a mark of respect. East Africa was in mourning for its celebrated flying doctor, Anne Shpuri, felled by a stroke 4 days previously at age 80. Still in harness to her life's calling, helping the rural poor. Over 1,000 people found space in the flying doctor's hangar to pay last respects. The ceremony rang with the solemnity of a state funeral. Many had traveled from overseas, and no sector of Kenyan society was lacking. Infants strapped to their mothers' backs, creaky-limbed elders, a colorful array of tribes, Asian merchants, Europeans, Americans, government ministers, the diplomatic corps, and unattended children all jostled for sightlines in the echoing metal building. Dr. Anne Shpuri had spent nearly 50 years in Africa, tending to the health of over 1 million patients, drawn mostly from the far corners of Kenya. It was said no other physician could match her industry, tenacity, and productivity in the cause of Africa's well-being. As a sole lifeline for the poor, it was not uncommon for patients to declare her a saint. In the hangar, the mourners were a study in devotion, stifling coughs, eyes flickering from emotion, minds reliving the triumphs of her life. The sight of Shpuri's Piper Lance PA-32 plane, known throughout Kenya as Zulu Tango, from its call sign 5 Yankee AZT, drew many to reach for handkerchiefs. Positioned front and center, both coffin and airplane were draped in tropical garlands. For those who once awaited Anne on ribbon-thin airstrips, this Africa-scarred machine spoke of endurance and courage. Zulu Tango had been their sole glimmer of hope in a land begging for miracles. Over the course of Spurry's long career, no place had been too far, no airstrip too risky, no patient beyond caring. Inside the echoing hangar, eulogies ran long, with every speaker heaping praise on the doctor for her no-nonsense style, strength, and compassion. An elderly woman whose broken arm Dr. Spurry had set years before likened her to Mother Teresa. Another called her an angel from heaven. Wherever she landed, she was greeted as Mama Doctari, Mother Doctor, a sobriquet that met with Anne's hearty approval. When an unscheduled speaker, footsore from travel, rushed the podium, mourners checked their programs to see if they had missed something. He was a tall, dignified farmer, dressed in his one suit, confected with the red dust of Africa, and a tie that was black and borrowed. All leaned forward to hear his love sonnet. In linen-soft words, he declared that Dr. Spurry had saved not just him, but entire villages. He was here at the urging of his community to reassure all Dr. Spurry would never be forgotten, not in the far corners of Africa, in this generation, or the next. When he finished with a barely audible, "God bless you, Mama Doctari," the Kenya Boys Choir burst into Ave Maria. Soon, the chanting bridged into a song of old Africa with one lone alto, repeating, "Ka maisho marefu," live forever, against an alto chorus and the beating aorta of a drum. The finale cued six strong men to lever open the hangar doors. As they did, a laser beam of noonday sun formed a corona over Zulu Tango, prompting a woman to confide, "The doors of heaven just opened." Pallbearers hoisted the casket into the hold, then jockeyed the plane onto the apron. Outside, a throng of Wilson Airport personnel, most in coveralls, bowed their heads to honor the woman who for over 35 years they had guided safely home. Dispensing with pre-flight checks, the Flying Doctor's chief pilot, Jim Heather Hayes, fired up Zulu Tango's engine and was soon airborne. Almost immediately, he dropped a wing and banked hard. He had one last time-honored African ritual to perform before setting off for an Indian Ocean island 290 miles to the east. Leaning into the controls, he drove Zulu Tango at the hangar, scattering the kites and missing the roof by mere feet. Later he recalled that as he rocketed over the heads of the mourners, the fluttering white handkerchiefs evoked a white-capped sea. Once he had burst through equatorial clouds, Heather Hayes set a course for the coast. From the ground, even when Zulu Tango was a mere pinprick, a few mourners continued to wave, as if trying to will Anne Spurry back for one last farewell. Many viewed her final flight as a death knell of individualism, a paean to an older Africa of boundless dreams and extravagant passions. But Africa has a gift for concealment. This funeral was not only a tribute to a much-loved caregiver, but also a triumph of transformation. In 1948, when Anne Spurry set foot in Africa for the first time, she was consumed by two dreams. One was to disappear, the other to start over. Admittedly, she was not the first to use the continent for cover. With great spaces and laws begging to be broken, Africa lends itself to secrets. In Anne's case, it rearranged a past of staggering complexity into a future of endless possibilities. Even now, after half a century, her secrets were still safe. Among those who loved her, I include myself.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?